Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Did I make it? Am I here? Yes, I am.
You're here.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and I was a little concerned because I got blipped during this whole intro. I didn't know. Yeah, like I got blipped in my internet. I don't know what just happened. Things are crazy. So we got storms here in the good old Nashville of Tennessee. So I don't know, but apparently I'm still here. And with me are my co-hosts, Matthew Aguilar.
Yo, yo.
Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
And we got a special guest who I can stop stalling for because I just learned how to pronounce his last name and we got it down. And it's one of our great writers. He covers a variety of things. I think his primary forte is gaming, if I'm not.
Yes, gaming.
So Mark Deschamps is with us.
You nailed it, Kofi. Perfect.
I had a bit of a crib sheet by just frantically messaging you on the side and being like, how do I pronounce your last names? Because I don't want to butcher anybody's name. I hate doing that. And I didn't want to say Deschamps or something. And I feel like that's what people always say and like mess it up. So I wanted to get the real Frenchness of it. And I wanted to get it down. So Mark, thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we love having you guys. It's hard to get anybody from the gaming community in here. You guys are notoriously fickle about coming on our show. I'm talking to you, Tanner, Roland. But,
they're all too shy.
Yeah. Called out.
Yeah, they're all very shy.
I mean, they're used to their gaming, and yeah, man, they're just used to screaming at people like me over chats. I get it. But Mark is joining us today because being a gaming expert, this is a great time for you to be on because we just got a big gaming movie release, which is Mortal Kombat, the 2021 reboot of the Mortal Kombat movie franchise is now out on HBO Max and in theaters. And it created kind of quite a buzz over the weekend. I was kind of keeping an eye on social media because I'm very curious about especially these WB movies and the HBO Max release and what it all does. And so we're going to talk Mortal Kombat spoilers. We're going to talk some other things down the line if you guys want to be here and stick around. We're also going to get to what happened in the end of the Falcon and Winter Soldier and Captain America 4 coming and all that. We're also going to talk what's happening next in the MonsterVerse after Godzilla versus Kong. And we got some big comic things to talk about today. But like I said, first, let's get to it. Let's talk about Mortal Kombat. And we're going to be talking about this movie in full spoilers. We had Chris Killian give you a preview before it came out, but let's get down to it. So Rich, if you're back there, do we have our spoiler alert so we can just warn everybody? So before we jump into all this.
I just read one of the comments. I bathed in its gore. Wow.
That is an amazing comment.
Yeah, that's an intense comment. Some people are like happy they're bathing in Mortal Kombat's gore. So let's get into all of that. All right. Mortal Kombat's out. I'll just quickly kind of start it off. I was a kid. I was a 90s kid. So when this movie was released in 95, I was with my best friend visiting New Mexico. We went to a theater. And man, you know, that was a joint for me. You know, that's kind of martial arts epic movie built off a video game. I enjoyed it. I mean, that's just a long short of it. To me, it was a classic. It had a lot of classic moments and just classic performances. And yeah, Mortal Kombat is a cult, if not a classic on the cinema level, is definitely a cult classic movie for me as a 90s kid. So I was kind of interested to see. I haven't kept with the games as much as other people have in their kind of later iterations as we've gone up to like 9, 10, 11 and these kind of drastic redos of the story and the mythology. But I thought that this Mortal Kombat is a lot like the 95 one in that it's fun for what it is, but it, it is not high cinema, obviously. But it's fun for what it is. I think this one is a little bit sloppier than a 95 in the terms of the way it's kind of put together. And of course the fun factor, I think 95 is still the more fun Mortal Kombat, but this one was an interesting, if not a bit jumbled franchise starter. There are some things that I really want to dig into that that did bother me about this movie. Kind of like it, it does skirt around the line of just logic and narrative a lot. But just to give us some crazy payoffs and try to make it a video game movie in a sense. But yeah, we'll dig into deeper. But like I said, I think it was fun for what it is. I also bathed in the gore. I loved that. I did not mind seeing heroes do some truly horror movie jigsaw type stuff to people. I dug that. And a lot of the main fight sequences were very entertaining and very well done, even if they were somewhat kind of familiar and derivative, like, you know, Kano versus Sonya. Like, I've seen that. It was called Kill Bill 2, where they fought in a trailer. And like, I like Kill Bill 2 a little bit more, but this was still pretty entertaining. So that's me. Mark, you're the guest. Let's throw it to you. What did you think about Mortal Kombat as both a gamer and a movie fan?
Well, like you, Kofi, I grew up with the 95 Mortal Kombat movie. I was about 10 or 11 when it came out, which was like the perfect age for that movie because like it's great, but it's dumb. Like it's dumb great. And that clicks with you at that age. And what I liked about the new movie is it felt like something I would have loved when I was 10. And like, I feel like if you're a kid that can handle gore, like this is a movie, I know it's R-rated. I feel like that's still kind of like the target audience, people who were 10, like that worked perfectly for me. The gore was excellent. Like you, from a cinematic perspective, I thought it left a little bit to be desired, but from like that, you know, growing up with Mortal Kombat perspective, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Man, simple. So I like gaming. You guys keep it concise. You get to the point. I love it. Matt, you're always, we never know which way you're going to go. We're going to get the sugar or the peppery or the salty. You could be salty, sugary, or peppery. What do you got for us this time?
I'm the ultimate thing of Chex Mix. That's what I am. I am travel mix. I will say this movie was dope. This movie was awesome. I went in fully expecting, like fully knowing what I was going to get. You know, I mean, it's Mortal Kombat. I played most of, if not all the games. These plots are all over the place. I don't go in expecting Scorsese. I know what I'm getting. And this movie gave me that in spades and just complete, like it, from the moment someone said, and I cannot remember exactly when, because we get a couple of these moments where like people literally say the words fatality out loud and like, finish
flawless
him like
flawless victory. It might have been Kano wins.
I don't remember which one was first, but essentially
I think Kano wins. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
Kano
for the wins first one of those though, because there's several, I was like, yeah, okay, I'm in. Like I was like, same. That was it. That's all it took. Okay. It was an acknowledgement of like, this is what to expect from our film. That first sequence with the fight between Sub-Zero, not Sub-Zero at the time, and Scorpion again. Scorpion at the time. Those, like that fight, I thought was pretty indicative of what was to come. So, I mean, if you don't like that fight, I feel like you're probably not going to love the other stuff that comes after that. I will totally get why some fit, because I've seen this a couple places of like Scorpion got the shaft, even though like the character is fundamental to like the main character's plot and things like that. As a whole, if you were a Scorpion fan going into this, you're probably going to be bummed because like he's in the movie a total of 10 minutes, it feels like. I am a Sub-Zero fan, always have been. So I was loving this movie. Like this is a Sub-Zero movie in pretty much every way. And I just loved how they brought such a welcome, like not horror vibe, but just a little like an edginess and a tension to that character that he lacks a lot of times, because especially in the games too, like he's the, you know, kind of the Stone Cold. He's like the anti-hero at this point of the gaming franchise. So here I thought it was really nice to see like that villain part of him explored.
Yeah, it's basically Jason Voorhees in this.
I dug it. I dug it. I was all about it. Yes, some of the plot stuff I'm sure it doesn't make sense.
Every time he showed up on screen, I was like, somebody about to die.
Somebody about to die. And it was great. I dug it. So yeah, I was all in. Janelle, what do you think?
Oh gosh. So let me just, I said this last week, Mortal Kombat 95 is in my top five favorite movies of all time. So I was the little girl that was dragging my parents to the movie theater to go watch this. And I'm sure my mom was going, what did I do wrong? Because all my other friends were watching like Barbie flicks and stuff like that. But totally obsessed with it. I thought they did such a good job. With the hype that I was hearing online and from like Chris Killian when he came on, I thought there was going to be more gore. I actually could have had more. Like, I want an entire like spine rip out of like, I'm ready for all of it. And Chris also said that there was no techno Mortal Kombat theme, and he was wrong, because there, I was definitely listening for that. The soundtrack to me is so much a part of that first movie. Like, it's like another character. You have to have that soundtrack, and they did pay homage, and there was techno version. So it was awesome. My standout, obviously Scorpion, he's my favorite character. I love getting a backstory on this scary dude that, you know, from the original movie, you're just like, oh gosh, he's just creepy. And he has a scary fire skull, and he like, he's battling Johnny Cage down in hell. But, yeah,
leech in his hand.
Yeah. It's really, I was really, really happy with it as a huge fan of the retro film. I am completely satisfied, but I wish that we could ask, if anybody is in chat who have watched it, what was your experience if you didn't have any, you know, knowledge, previous understanding of Mortal Kombat? Because I feel like you would kind of like just the leg sweep with Liu Kang, that one part, I was dying laughing. I was like out loud, like belly laughing, because that was me trying to play the video game. I liked the movie so much, I tried to play the video game.
Dude, that was the only thing in the arcade. You could get in fights like that in the arcade. If you don't remember what arcades were like, I mean, now in retrospect, they were super creepy, but like some grown man would beat a bunch of kids. But like, yeah, man, that leg sweep, you could start some fights in the arcade. If you were there for Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2 and Mortal Kombat 3, you know what I'm talking about.
So good. I just want to say I'm so grateful. Some of these, I feel like this like 20 year later skip is happening a lot in movies and TV shows and things like that, where like they're bringing back throwback films and TV shows and things like that. And some of them are fizzling. And this one, I'm just so pumped. I'm so glad they decided to bring it back. And I'm holding out hope for, you know, more announcements.
Ooh, our Facebook fans don't seem to like this. I mean, we got super trash, underwhelmed, garbage. Yeah, it's
very divisive. I've noticed.
Also, I watched it twice in one day.
Dang. Dang, wow. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Props, number one, off of what Janelle was saying, because back like the leg sweeps thing was awesome. Also, props to who designed like the fighting choreography with Jax, because like there's elements of his combos in that fight scene. And it's so cool to like see him actually do things that you're like, oh my God, I remember pulling that off. Like it's cool, the like attention to detail there. And I had, I will say Ludie Lin killed this as Liu Kang. He was fantastic. Oh gosh, yeah. I hate that character in the game.
He almost like overacted, but I dug it. Liu Kang. I was like, yes. Yeah. Liu Kang's
awful in the game.
He's so wholesome and like, yeah, it's like he was perfect.
Dude, but according to the most fan reactions I've seen, Kung Lao stole the show.
Kung Lao.
Yeah, he was awesome. Great.
So good.
Also, Cabal was fantastic.
Yeah.
Cabal
was those great. Two were big standouts for people. I mean, obviously, Kano was like the breakout star. This Chris Killian, I think, got that part right when he said that Kano was very much a breakout star in this, because he was. I mean, he delivered lines like, you know, that Kano wins thing in the first that, you know, actually pay like made it seem well done and like pulled off, you know, in a very good way.
As someone noted, he does also have the best fatality in the movie, I feel like.
Oh yeah,
the heart thing, or the lizard?
The spinning Kung Lao, the spinning. I think that's the best one.
Well, that's what I was referencing when I said I don't mind heroes who do some crazy Saw type stuff to people. Like, I was like, okay. I mean, it's not every day you see a movie like where a dude just saws a woman in half, even if she's a demonic, you know, succubus woman. Like, it was pretty intense, and they show every part of that. Like, if you don't know what we're talking about, this is a spoiler if you're probably not going to watch the movie anyway. Kung Lao's fighting this winged beast lady. I don't know. I forget her name. Not important. She doesn't last long. and she's trying to swoop in from the back and get him. And he kind of jumps on her back and is flying on her back. And he kind of calls his hat out into the sand and turns it into a saw blade and runs her right through the saw blade and saws her completely in half, which they show every inch of this, just, you know, her split in half.
That's Natara,
and he's just
right?
soaked in blood. What's that?
It's Natara, right? Isn't that?
I don't know the like upper games and stuff.
I didn't either. I didn't know any of the newer characters, but I was okay with that.
That was about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like I said, it doesn't matter. She doesn't say much. She does not last long.
It surely doesn't.
And so, like, yeah, she gets sawed in half and Kung Lao puts on he's just soaked in blood and he's just like, you know, puts on his hat and does his pose and with a flawless victory, which is badass. But I was like, okay, I guess these are heroes. Like, yeah, sure. But okay. So we've kind of been good on Mortal Kombat. I'm gonna have to take it down to a more negative place. There are some crazy things about this movie. A lot of people are mad. I feel like the classic villains are getting kind of played out and old and weren't really effectively used in this one. Shang Tsung was weak as hell to me, like, as a villain in this. Like, all he did was warp places he wasn't supposed to and eat one dude's like soul. Goro was just completely like, I was just
boy,
like,
punked. Goro got punked.
Yeah. By literal plot armor that a guy develops, you know, that Cole develops. They're like, what do we do with this Akuna or whatever? He's like, I don't know. Just like, give him some plot armor. He can't be beat because he's now like,
I know it's not spelled the same, but did anyone actually sing Akuna Matata after one of those?
I did. I kept saying it to me. Yeah. I kept saying it like over and over.
Not
gonna lie. I made that joke like 50 times.
I'm not gonna lie.
So I wasn't impressed with the whole Goro fight. Goro attacking a farmhouse just seemed really weird to me. Like, I was just like, this is weird. But yeah, the narrative of this is just a ridiculous thing. And whenever they tried to get dramatic, like Louis Tan, like, I mean, like, it was okay, but Cole was not my guy for this. Like, everybody else was more interesting to me than Cole. And when he got dramatic about his family, I was like, who the hell cares? Kill them already. Like, just murder them. Like,
wow.
Then I could see you fight for real. Like, now I know why you'd be spazzing out. But yeah, the narrative is a mess. Like, I feel like, I don't know who wrote, like, I mean, I know who wrote this, but like what they were thinking, but it's basically Shang Tsung's trying to cheat the tournament and keeps attacking them while they're like doing these training montages. We never actually get to the actual tournament. We just have them set up video game fights because in a montage, Cole is just like, yeah, we each could attack somebody. We'll have these one-on-ones and then we'll have a tag team big finish. And it's just like sequences of them playing Mortal Kombat matches, basically. You know, which by that point I was good because I was like, I don't need to see any more narrative out of this. Just like, let's get to the fight. And let's get to the Sub-Zero Scorpion stuff, which was awesome. And like Matt said, the fight choreography was awesome. And the Scorpion Sub-Zero stuff was just really cool. And that whole sequence is cool. And it was brutal. Like, yeah, they really set the tone in that opening scene where B-Lon, who becomes Sub-Zero, like murders Scorpion's family and like his little kid and stuff. I was like, okay, I guess. Yeah, I was like, I guess we're doing this. All right. This is how we're going in to, you know, 10 toes deep. But yeah, the story is a mess. The dramatic acting was a mess. Like that was all terrible to me. But it gets by because we got to see people, you know, Mortal Kombat characters doing Mortal Kombat fights, and the jokes and the kind of humor of it was good enough for me and was pretty good. So there is room for this franchise to grow. I would say maybe in the hands of a better director after this, but there is definite room for this to grow, like having an actual tournament, having more Scorpion, having some better villains, you know, who
Johnny Cage.
Johnny Cage. But like, you know, there's a lot to do. Quan Chi. I want them to get into the weird.
Oh, my God. Why the hell? Like,
yeah, I want them to get into the weird, like Revenants, like, you know, when they're dead, their shadow selves and the time travel. I mean, by the time we get to third movie, why not? Like, let's just put it all on the table and get weird with this.
So when Goro popped up, it took me a minute to like realize that, like, the like teleporting effect, the evil teleporting effect was the same across the board. It wasn't like customized to each person. So I went, oh my God, smoke. Like I lost my mind for a minute. And then it was like Goro and I was completely let down. I was like, oh, it's just Goro.
Oh, I thought it was smoke too for a minute. I was like, whoa. Right.
And then like, oh. I picked up later that it's just like, that's the effect that everyone gets on his side while Raiden like makes everybody go through. I didn't know electricity also acted as portals. Like there's a lot of that stuff, you know, kind of weird stuff. But yeah, I was totally like smoke.
So I was just really let down by all the villains in general. Like I felt like they all got taken out like super easily. Like they built them up to be like this great threat. And then as soon as it was one-on-one, like there was no difficulty whatsoever there.
Dude, Melina, like blast of like through the body. I'm like, that seemed weird. Cause like I was all about that fight. Cause they tease it, you know, and like when Sonya finally gets her, you know, like finally comes in, gets the symbol and everything, I was like, yes, we're gonna see this throwdown. And then literally it lasts for 2 minutes. Not even. I don't even think it's 2 minutes. I was disappointed by that. Yeah, I agree. Except for Sub-Zero. Sub-Zero, yeah, I thought they actually paid the right amount.
The beginning of that third act felt really sloppy and choppy. Like, that's where the movie, where they were like, okay, just cut this up and, like, let's get to it. Because, yeah, I mean, there was, like, a lot of weird misdirection, like Melina fighting Cole and then, you know, Sonya finally just coming in for the kill shot. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm always happy to see Sonya's rings again because I blasted a lot of fools with those in the original games.
They look cool.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just kind of weird and choppy. And like those rivalries, like you said, they set up, didn't really like play out like the same way. Like Goro, Cole didn't know Goro from a hole in the wall. He just was like, oh, there's this four-armed monster in my farmhouse. Like, and that was just like really weird. And like you said, Melina and Sonya didn't really get to have their thing. And even Kung Lao did have like some big, long grudge against this wing lady like Natara. It was only in Cabal didn't even like fight Kano, like, you know, they just partnered up again after he like killed him. Don't think about any of this, just don't think about it. Just they beat each other up, it was cool. Yeah, but I think Sub-Zero clearly was in, you know, Joseph Joe Talsom, I don't want to butcher his name, the guy from the raid, but yeah, he was great in this. And making Sub-Zero like the Jason Voorhees of this franchise was a brilliant move, I think. And that alone was really great. So yes, I would like to see more from, yeah, I say all that and I slam Mortal Kombat, but I would like to see more of it. I would like to see more. Just some tweaks, right? Like some better character drama, an actual tournament. I'd like to see more of Outworld or Netherrealm or like some of these other things that of course were not in the budget for this one, obviously. But yeah, there's more they could do. So that's me on Mortal Kombat. Anybody have any closing thoughts?
I really hope we get Kano back. Like, I know he like kind of died, but like this is Mortal Kombat.
Oh no. Yeah. We definitely got to bring him back. That's what I've said. You could do those like shadow cells or the remnants or whatever they called them in the games where people come back and those like dark wraith versions of themselves. And you know, the later games are all kind of built on that idea. Yeah. Bring him back for sure.
I really felt like he fit like the Johnny Cage hole because like Johnny Cage was the comic relief in the 95 movie. You needed that with this. And like, he made me laugh every time he was on screen, which is not like an easy task. Like I thought he really did a lot with it and I would love to see him back. I was actually really disappointed when he like turned, you knew he was going to turn, but like when the turn happened, it really bummed me out. So like, I hope we get him back. I hope we get to see more done with him.
Agreed. Yeah. He was a bright spot.
Hashtag bring back Kano for sure.
Also, Outworld is a very picturesque place. I did not expect that. Like, it looks far prettier than I feel like it's supposed to be. Like every time they would show these like crazy vistas and it's like, yeah, that's kind of pretty.
I feel like you need to talk to the groundskeeper at your apartment.
I don't know. I just thought like, it's like you hear this place and like typically in the games, it's like, you know, everything's gloomy. It's always dark. Everything's like, there's giant ruptures of like crazy green energy and stuff. Like here, it's like, oh, that looks like, you know, Minnesota. I don't know.
They just went for a casual stroll.
They went to Montana. You know,
Crow 0731 says, "Restore the Kanoverse." Amen.
Oh, shit.
Alex Cosman released the Kano cut. Kano's getting his own hashtags. We've done our job here.
Awesome.
So that's it. Mortal Kombat is available on HBO Max and in theaters right now. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Check it out if you haven't. Make your own decision. If our spoiler-filled discussion helped you, you're welcome. All right, that'll do it. Mark, thank you for joining us. We're going to let you get out of here because gaming always has – they always have something else to do, man. They're always like –
it's always something.
Yeah, they roll through. They just appear at your party and then kind of roll out.
It was a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.
All right, we got to – pay some bills, so we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, it's time to get into Marvel's ending of the Falcon and Winter Soldier, the setup for Captain America 4, and what that's all about. Plus, we are also going to talk about what's next in the Godzilla versus Kong monsterverse. Stay tuned.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Man, it always scares me when we come
back. That music scares the snot out of me.
It scares me every time when we come back from break. My God, it makes me jump. I was like, whoa. Yeah. All right, so we're back, kind of. We're a little bit shook. But let's real quick just jump to Godzilla versus Kong and the Monsterverse. So Godzilla versus Kong was the previous big movie to come out on HBO Max and in theaters, and it's done well for itself. I mean, it's not unfair to say that Godzilla versus Kong has kind of sparked, you know, re-sparked the movie theater industry by making, you know, pretty good money overseas. And yeah, kind of like I said, lighting up the box office in the US and abroad. And so with that kind of success, obviously this was supposed to be the culmination of the whole MonsterVerse, you know, franchise for Warner Brothers, Kong Skull Island, Godzilla 2014, Godzilla King of the Monsters, and now this. So what's next? So a new report has come out that says Godzilla vs. Kong director Adam Wingard is in talks with Legendary Pictures, and they are, quote unquote, quietly taking steps to stretch the MonsterVerse with more installments, one or more. And we always know which way studios like to go, or the or more. No timetable on this, but they're going to keep this thing going, it seems like. There's already been some kind of suggestions that what we could see is Son of Kong, I believe, was one title that was kind of thrown out there, which is, again, would be a remake of the classic kind of kaiju movies and Kong movies. But it seems like we're going to do that, although that would be, I don't know. What do you guys think about the MonsterVerse? Where do you go from here? What would you be interested in seeing? Hit me with your best ideas. Janelle.
I feel clueless. Like I don't care that much about the MonsterVerse personally, so it is not something that I have thought about. I'm looking forward to Loki and like other Marvel properties that just this doesn't really get me pumped about, like any, like none of it really. I'll watch it, but I was kind of half watching Godzilla versus Kong anyways. So I feel like I'm the worst judge of this, but you know, it could be cool. I'll watch it. I will take it in. It like keep the actors going. Like let's keep this universe going. Don't replace people, and I'll just hope for the best, I guess.
The more content, girl.
Marginal, I don't care.
Much more content.
I know.
That's all right. I'm going to stick up for this, actually, because I was sitting here thinking about it. I think I would be down with a Sonic Kong movie. One is personal because, you know, I'm in the midst of trying to raise a son right now who's 2 going on 3. And I feel like he turns me into a wild ape quite often. And his reactions to me, we
especially
have wild,
COVID.
Yeah, wild ape kind of interactions. Thank God for my wife. But yeah, I think Son of Kong would be great because I could actually envision that being the first of these movies that we could really, in a major way, just say F the human characters and kind of get rid of them, because most of that movie would be a cute, kind of awesome and scary epic movie of Kong trying to raise his kid and keep his son safe, especially if there's some drama like the mom dies and blah, blah, blah. And it's just the two of them and him trying to, you know, parent this son would be actually kind of amazing to watch to me. And having, if they're in Hollow Earth and there was all these other monsters and threats that he's got to kind of keep his boy safe from. And, you know, I'm sure humans would have to help them in some way, but like we could spend a lot. It'd be more like, you know, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, where if you saw that movie, the whole opening 30, 40 minutes was just the apes living in their society with Caesar using sign language, kind of figuring out their stuff. And that was amazing to me. It was like the best part of those movies. So I'd be actually down with Son of Kong. I think it's time. I think it was maybe Wingard who said that, you know, we could do away with the human audience. It's time to just, and that's why he didn't do all those reaction shots from the ground up. But yeah, I would love to see Kong raising a kid, you know, and them taking on threats and, you know, being scared for his little boy in these fights just to see the kid rise up and be just as strong as his dad and stuff like that. So that'd be kind of cool. I'm down with that. More content.
I'm down with that too, actually.
Where's mom? Like, where does the mom fit in all this?
She did.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, they gotta save mom, you know, something like that. If you want to hope for more hopeful things, something happened to mom and they gotta save mom.
Yeah, I'm down for a Son of Kong though. Like, I would watch that because honestly, I don't really need another Godzilla movie. I know people hate me for this, but like, I don't care. I don't care about Godzilla.
Let's just stop for a minute and just say, I don't think there's any more. We've tried a Godzilla trilogy, and I don't think any of it has managed to make any kind of impact on deeper levels of Godzilla-ing. Like, it's just a dumb lizard. You know, I mean, I know how people feel about lizards and stuff, but he's just a dumb, destructive lizard that just wants to be, you know, the king. So we
right,
get it.
Yeah, like it's just very basic, which is fine. And again, we just talked about Mortal Kombat, right? So I go into a Godzilla movie expecting certain things. I know what I'm getting. So I'm not necessarily faulting for doing what it's supposed to do. But at the same time, the only movie in the MonsterVerse that really I found myself liking on a different level than just the surface was Kong Skull Island, because I cared about Kong. And so he's the best part of the newest movie to me as well. So if I'm going to care about the MonsterVerse in any way, it's going to be revolving around him and his family. So yeah, you throw in fatherhood and all that stuff and keep the human characters in service of the Kong plotline, I'm good. I'd go watch that. As for anything else, you know, I don't close the door. I mean, I like this universe. You know, there's so many cool creatures and so many different things that you can spotlight if you really wanted to. So I'm good for more, but that is the one that interests me most.
I'm going to, you know, several commenters have said this, and guys, we saw you. Legendary does hold the cards to pull off something like a MonsterVerse Pacific Rim crossover, which I would be down for too. Yeah. Only good way I could see the human characters getting used is trying to pilot those stupid Jaegers with their mind melds and trying to fight Godzilla and or King Kong. That would be pretty awesome. And then teaming up with them to kill the kaiju, you know, that'd be pretty rad.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah. Sign me up for that. You know, take these two half franchises we got going and slap them together. And now you got something. Godzilla, Kong, robots, boom. That's pretty much the trifecta. You take all your toys and just put them together. We all did it as kids, so I'm down with you, Pacific Rim MonsterVerse crossover people. So, yeah, but, yeah, no, I mean, the Son of Kong thing, the more I think about it, could be a great story. Like whether Kong never realizes that he had a son and he's got to start paying monster versus child support and hanging out with him and all that stuff. And they
have a
bad relationship because of that. And because he was like, where were you, Dad? You were off on Skull Island, like, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. There's a lot.
Could they just be doing like sign language the whole time? Or like,
well, he would have to teach him. I mean, there's a lot. That's why it's powerful. There's a lot you could do about a father and son story, you know, about what it is to be a dad, you know, how you have to teach them and, you know, basically teach your little boy not to be a crazy animal, which is every father's journey, and having to solve your own toxic man shit in the process. Sorry, but that's also part of this journey. You know, all of that is something you could work out pretty effectively in a Kong movie, but I don't get paid for this, so that's all I'm giving them. All right, Godzilla versus Kong, the MonsterVerse, we're just going to keep going. That is the bottom line. Let's move right along to our big Marvel discussion. Falcon and Winter Soldier is over, y'all. I wasn't too thrilled with the finale episode, per se. It did what it needed to do. It put the pieces in place. But as I'm getting kind of let down by these final battles in these Disney Plus shows. It's always the episode before that seems to be the best one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, WandaVision had the episode before of going back through Wanda's past and visiting those periods and doing that whole thing. And that was awesome. Falcon and Winter Soldier did episode 5, Truth, which was the battle with John Walker and revisiting Isaiah Bradley and Sam making the decision and all that stuff and resolving a lot of those plot lines. And this was just a big battle at the GRC with the Flag Smashers and stuff. And yeah, there's a lot of confusing stuff that happened in the show. It feels like, again, COVID might, and they said that it hasn't. People are kind of like downplaying it, but I feel like COVID did jumble up the show a little bit and kind of muddle some of it. Yeah. Some things are just really confusing. Like, the characterizations are really confusing. It's like the show didn't had villains, but never wanted to really say they were villains. And, you know, kind of we're all over the place with that, which is unusual for the MCU. But yeah, I mean, John Walker, I was like, we're supposed to hate, but by the end, we're supposed to love because now he's like helping people and fighting with Sam and Bucky. And Carly Morgenthau is somebody we're supposed to be sympathetic to on a political level. But then at the end, she's just like, hey, put those people in armored cars and burn them. And let's just gas this place. And you're like, okay. And even her followers are like, whoa, bro. Like, and he's like, all we're going to say is one world, one people. That's all good. And it's like, no, that's not all good. Like, I don't know. You are a terrorist. But then at the end, he's like, don't call them a terrorist. You know, as a black Captain America, I'm not sure that was the hill to start dying on right away. It was kind of confusing and kind of muddled. They killed my boy Batroc, which was kind of unforgivable to me, but yeah. Anyway, Sam Wilson, Falcon, became Captain America. He got a new suit. Captain America's thighs will save lives. I've been saying that ever since.
Tree trunks. Yeah. Tree trunks, man.
Yeah. And now that was that. That was kind of the muted ending to that. But what Marvel did unexpectedly, I don't think any of us expected this as we were kind of rushing through Falcon and the Winter Soldier kind of ending stuff on Friday, was Marvel just came out and was like, all right, that Captain America 4 is coming. And so, yeah, we're getting Captain America 4 with Falcon and Winter Soldier showrunner Malcolm Spellman, I believe, and the writer of the Truth episode. And I don't want to butcher his name, but he's also going to be working on the film. They're going to be writing it together, which is kind of exciting in its way, because this will be Sam Wilson's kind of first outing as, you know, Captain America. He is getting a proper movie, which I think was important and kind of good. And yeah, the fact that they're bringing the Falcon and Winter Soldier creative people into it to handle the script lets me know that they aren't going to shy away, even on the big screen. Because I was really kind of curious about, like, would Marvel really take it there on one of their big blockbuster movies as opposed to this kind of long form TV format? And it seems like they won't. They will lean into kind of, you know, again, the things about race in American society and what it means for a black man to take up the shield as Captain America, but also having a lot of nods. And, you know, I say this to a lot of people who would understand it, but like, yeah, Falcon and Winter Soldier was, you know, was black as hell in some ways, and the things that it was willing to kind of go into and the way it approached things, it talked about things. And I feel like we're going to get that flavor in this kind of Captain America movie. And I'm really interested to see. As for what they're going to do with the story, I have no idea. I don't know if it's going to be just a kind of separate new story. I hope we bring back Chris Evans because he's big time enough to appear in a movie as Steve Rogers and help us settle some of this. But will we see like John Walker show up again? Like, you know, where are these other characters? The Falcon and Winter Soldier left so many threads open for the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I'm just kind of interested to see which ones will come in Captain America 4. I never read Sam Wilson, Captain America, the comic run. I'm going to now, obviously. But Matt, you have any insight for us on that front?
I mean, most of the things that I'm excited about are things they've set up in this finale. But again, it's just continuations. They surprised me in a welcome way as far as how they leaned into that storyline throughout the season. And that was my biggest thing going into it. Is this going to be a, you know, sugar-coated version of this? Are they going to avoid the controversial things or whatever and just gloss over them so that you can say, hey, look, we shined a light here, and then not really go any deeper? And they didn't. And I'm excited for some of that in the movie. I think it actually benefits the fact that it's the same team, but my biggest issues with this season overall have been what I kind of constitute as like unnecessary elements. There's a lot of, like, if you were to go through this season, you could cut a lot of fat and stuff that just either complicated the plot for no reason or just ended up really not delivering the message that I think they were trying to send. And if you just boil it down to the stuff revolving around Sam, revolving around the legacy, revolving around Isaiah Bradley, that's a show in itself. Like, I don't even think you really needed Winter Soldier, but I don't think you needed like all the other stuff that comes with it. And so for them going into a movie where you kind of have to boil some of that down just for natural runtime purposes, but also just focus. He's now Cap. You can now just run with that ball. You don't have to do a bunch of setup. I think is beneficial. I'm actually excited that they're going to do a movie next and not a show, because I really think like he's ready. You don't have to do that. So I'm excited for that. I will say two things about the finale. I agree with you in a lot of ways that like there are things about this finale that just like people about facing characters just seem like to go in completely opposite ways. It's kind of like how people
Sharon Carter gassed a guy, melted right. his face.
So right. weird.
Right. Yeah. And then, but like, even with her, right, because some of the stuff is like she hasn't been really given her due. You still are kind of like, yeah, you're in her corner. And then you're happy that the pardon comes. And then it's like, nope, I'm still going to be playing both sides and all this stuff. And it's like, which I find interesting for that character. But it's just one in like several of like, I don't feel the way you want me to feel about these people. Like I don't feel happy for Walker. I don't feel like that villain and like that whole thing with the Flag Smashers, I just thought fell on its face. So I don't know why Sam is going to bat for them. It's weird. However, my whole thing coming into the show was this finale was like, I feel like it's going to disappoint some people, but as long as they get me to where he is Cap and we get that running with the necessary emotion it needs to really hit with an impact, I'll be okay. And for me, that final sequence between Isaiah and Sam, I cried. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I teared up. I thought that was an emotional moment. That's the kind of stuff I loved from this series, is when you go into that and you explore that stuff and that whole conversation between them. And I loved that. And that was what I wanted from this finale. Like, I could have just had, I didn't need all the other stuff. That stuff is the substance for me for this whole series. So if the movie can continue to do that and build off of that, we're good. Like, even if they change everything from the comics, that's the core. Like, that's the stuff that makes it, that made that run interesting. So I'm good for it if we can do that.
Man, that was a complex answer. I meant, like, wasn't there just simple plot lines from the comic that you could just tell,
man,
us?
Like, nah, man, I don't go surface, man. I go deep. I go deep, man.
Like, Sam fights, like, somebody.
That's not interesting to me. If they just, like, we've talked about it before. I'm over this, like, hey, well, I saw this character show up in page whatever, and they're in the MCU. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, we're past that. I want meaningful stories. I want character development. That's the stuff I cared about in this mm-hmm. show. I didn't care about that this character was from, hey, they're making an MCU movie. Duh. Like, what else do you expect? Like, I'm past that. Easter eggs bore me. I want real. And so when this show gives me that, I'm great. And when it doesn't, it's like,
put that in a rap lyric.
I'm just saying, I dropped the bar right there. I'm just going to put that.
Definitely put that in a rap lyric.
Bar.
Here, we got to get to a couple things that people are saying in the comments, and I don't want to forget about them. We don't know if Sharon is a Skrull. It would be a very interesting link between all of these kind of Earthbound shows, especially Secret Invasion, obviously, and Armored Wars. I think Armored Wars is going to be the undercover kind of, this dealt with Captain America's legacy. Now that he's gone after Endgame, I think Armored Wars is going to deal with Tony Stark's legacy in a big way, and probably set up Ironheart and Riri Williams and that whole thing by the end of it. I think that Sharon could be, the Power Broker could be a big player in Armor Wars, because, I mean, they basically spell that out at the end. She's like, all right, well, we tried Super Serum. It didn't work out. So we got tech now because I'm back in the government. I got that hookup. And so, you know, all that tech and stuff she could be giving out and be behind all of that. So, yeah, and I think that a lot of these series are what they're shaping up to be, which I have mixed feelings about, is they are just the plot filler that existed between Marvel movies all along. Now they just have a way to keep us tuned in and, you know, fill some of those things with development. So I think you are going to see things that are going to be all over the place. Like Matt was saying, this could have been just Sam's, you know, dealing with the legacy of Captain America. You didn't really need the Winter Soldier, except that we saw him and Bucky get the shield at the end of Endgame, and we would need to know why in Captain America 4, like, where the hell is Bucky, is what people would say. Yeah. So that's why we kind of got a Bucky thing tacked onto this, so that Sam could fully step out and have the shield, so that the next Captain America movie, we all know why he's there. We all know the circumstances. We all know what's going on and how the world has changed and what kind of stuff he's facing and what kind of secret things are stacked up against him. They could have used this format after, like, Iron Man 3, for example, between Avengers 2, which is one thing fans like me point to all the time of saying, yeah, that was a weird jump where Tony Stark ended Iron Man 3 being like, man, F a suit. I'm Iron Man because I am. And, like, yeah. I'm Tony Stark. And then in Avengers 2, he's just like, yep, I got all these suits. I'm back, baby. And you're like, wait, what happened here? Like,
Disney Plus series are tie-in issues.
Yeah, like, that's what it basically is. It's just a long tie-in issue to... And I made the joke on Twitter, but it is. It's like a re-origin for a character we already know, and for why they have a new costume and a slightly new circumstance in the MCU, so that the next movie we don't have to take time on all that. We already know. And I'm going to be interested to see how it works when we get to Doctor Strange 2 and Captain America 4. I'm now more curious than ever, because I'm not expecting big things in and of itself anymore of Loki and big reveals and stuff. But I'm wondering, like, what is the game of Loki then? Like, what is Loki really setting up? Like, are we going to finally get to this Marvel multiverse and this whole idea that can then expand to things like Kang and all this other stuff we're going to get? I mean, that's my bet, so that we don't have to have a primer for every movie. Like, what is the Marvel multiverse? What are the rules? What is this? What is that? Who are the policing people? Like, what is that? Like, we'll have all that established, right, through Loki.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what comes, but I'm kind of a little bit more wary of these series as they come up. I'm putting away my Mephisto Loki theories already. Like, I don't think he's going to show up in Mephisto. Yeah. I'm just mad I didn't get my Thunderbolts quite yet, but did I? Did Val? Is Val going to be setting up my Thunderbolts? I don't know.
They have to.
I don't know. But yeah, anybody else? Janelle?
Yeah, I've talked about this a lot, and I know we've, you know, it's been some time since we saw this episode, but I don't love the show. I can't believe I'm saying this. Like, it wasn't my favorite show. Didn't feel emotionally connected to any of the characters except for, like, just a few tiny little moments that are really relevant to the time we're in right now. And that was like the driving factor for me. I came into this show because Bucky Winter Soldier is one of my favorite characters in the MCU. And Matt, you said you didn't even need Winter Soldier in the series. And I completely agree with you. I feel like he should have just had his own series about how he becomes White Wolf. I'm disappointed in his skill. And I talked about this in several different places where people are arguing, like, But it's all about his mental illness and trying to get better. That's what the whole show is about. It's not about him being, a badass. I don't know if I can say ass on here. Like, I love Winter Soldier because he is so scary. He is a killer. He can take people out. He is strong and he is fierce. And I really haven't seen that since Civil War. I haven't seen him be strong. And that's what I wanted to see, at least in the resolution, at least in the last episode, at least like somewhere in this series. I want to see him obviously get past like this mental block that's going on. But I also want him to just be a fighter because he's really, really good at fighting. Very disappointed in his role in this. And if they do go on with the second season, I would really like the focus to be on his journey. Also, I keep catching a lot of flack for this, but Captain America, the new Falcon suit is awesome, but I cannot stop looking at his ear holes. They're so awkward. Like if you watch the episode again, like, you're just going to see these ears sticking out awkwardly. I know it's comic book accurate, but I wish they would have covered the ears or done something different. I don't like the headpiece at all. It's just so awkward. It's like people have sent me messages that's a good shot. Cause that's from the front.
I don't with the ears.
If you see it from the side, go back and watch it. It's just weird. It's just a little jarring, and people were sending me images of it, knowing that I had called it out on like,
is it a call out or do you have an ear thing? Let's just be honest.
I don't know. It's just,
do people's ears freak you out? You know?
Yeah. Do you Photoshop
ears out of things? Big,
like just the top, like let's let the top of his skull be completely open to getting pulverized. Like why? I don't understand. It just seems not, I don't know.
It's not conducive to flying.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I just give him a helmet. But like, other than that, it was amazing to see our new Captain America. I will
you
say
just that. Shredded everything about that and ended it like with like
it was amazing. This to
suck.
Have
Both main characters suck. The one main character looks like he's
I have good. To be but this
congrats,
way.
Congrats, yo, respect.
I have to be this way because I feel like, you know, I was so fulfilled for WandaVision. I was so happy, like even with the finale that wasn't, you know, we kind of all agreed it wasn't the strongest episode in the series. I still felt satisfied by it, and. I have to say this every week because we have new people that listen in, but this is better than the Real Housewives of San Diego or wherever the heck. I don't watch these shows. Is this show better than Dancing with the Stars? Yes, it's better than so many shows. It's an amazing show, but I have to hold it up against the MCU projects. And so to me, this is probably one of my least favorite MCU, you know, projects that I've seen.
But don't those other shows have
less? But it's still awesome. We still have Captain America.
Don't those other shows have less crazy ears?
I will take.
They probably have some crazy ears on Housewives.
I will take Isaiah Bradley and Sam Wilson interacting against almost anything else I saw in WandaVision.
Yeah, Carl Lumbee. Carl Lumbee puts it down, man. That's Mantis right there. And if you don't know what I mean by that, do your research. Mantis. M period A period N period T period I period S period.
Lots of periods.
Black superhero show in the 90s. Most of y'all probably didn't watch it. Good show. But
good for the 90s.
Yeah, man. Good for the 90s, right? That's all we had sometimes. Moving right along. So we're going to be on the lookout for what comes next from the Falcon Winter Soldier, because I'm curious if they're also going to do a season two of this and how that works. Like, is now Mackie too big for the show and now is in the movie? Bucky could still go on Nomad. I think they should do a Nomad type deal for him and just kind of let him go around, because that was cool in the first episode. And I feel like we never really came back to that first episode when they were separated and he was doing that whole thing. So
Samantha's loving the chat, by the way. Just gotta
put that's my man. Mantis, baby. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's talk comics this week. What do we got?
We got to breeze through these a little bit quicker, but let's start with Marvel. We're already on the Marvel train, so let's start with Marvel. So I remember talking about this for the first time, and Kofi's eyes, I think, rolled into the back of his head when we talked about this. So Miles Morales Spider-Man is getting its own clone saga, the infamous 90s, man, a lot of 90s talk today. The infamous 90s event for Spider-Man. And since then, they've done a Clone Saga kind of redo, so to speak, in the current Spider-Man books a couple years ago. And now Miles is getting his. So all of this takes off in Spider-Man, or sorry, Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 25. If you haven't been reading the issue, so I actually started, so I don't know if Janelle, you read any previous issues before this one.
Have not read any previous issues.
So I kind of started, I was like, here, let's start from here because this is actually the official launch of it. Yeah. I feel like there was some context missing. If you're not keeping up, it really felt like for a part one that you're kind of coming in the middle of a story for me. At least that's how it kind of felt initially. There's also not a lot of clone stuff until about midway through. So it's weird. It's a weird launching issue into what's kind of supposed to be a big event. But from the stuff that's here, I really enjoyed. There's a lot of interesting, Peter Parker shows up in this issue. And so there's a lot of really entertaining back and forth. Anytime they get together in a panel, it's always great. Saladin Ahmed and Carmen Carnero, by the way, the art in this is, I love Carmen's work on Captain Marvel. So like having her on this book is great. So it was interesting. I wasn't like taken away by this. Is a weird first issue, but there's some stuff I enjoyed. But yeah, it wasn't a hit out of the park for me. What did you guys think?
Oh man, this was like Clone Saga light, which is saying a lot because Clone Saga was already light. So this was like Clone Saga light, and I was just, yeah, I mean, I was really hoping they had found a way to crack into this topic in a new kind of exciting way, but I'm not there yet. I really don't. Here's my problems. First of all, the beginning of this is just a straight up beat for beat repeat of like original Clone Saga, just condensed really fast. You know, yeah. The mystery, there's a Spider-Man out there doing stuff, but it's not me. Like, what is it? You know, what's going on here? And then we get this thing where, you know, he goes and he has this encounter, and I feel like it's contrived that anybody should be able to stop and verify if somebody's a clone or not. It's Peter Parker, Spider-Man, instead of having a throwdown with Miles being like, you're not the real one. You must be the clone. Like, that just felt like really forced for. And again, it's just a repeat beat of a same story. The thing that kind of then threw me by the end that had me kind of like giving it the side glances, we get to the end and it's not Clone Saga for this is a very loose kind of concept because these are like genetic monsters based on Miles Morales, but they're not, when once he starts, one guy's face is melting and he's saying glub all the time. That's not really like a clone, bro. Like, that's not like a perfect copy of somebody by any measure. And the ones we meet at the end all look like they're also like something from John Carpenter's Thing. You know what I mean? So like, it's kind of a weird concept. It's like, if I would just make it like spider monsters built off Miles Morales, Clone Saga is just kind of a thing. And then there's nothing really like clone-ish about it. The whole thing that also got into you in the original Clone Saga was this kind of mind game where you made you doubt if Peter Parker was the original Peter Parker or if he hadn't been swapped out for a clone at some point, which was kind of this point of intrigue and really deeper subtext about like, what is reality? What does it mean to be like a clone? Who has the real experience? You know, that whole familiar sci-fi thing, which is cool about cloning and, you know, dying and living on and other body, all that stuff. Right. And the Clone Saga had a good villain, the Jackal, and big reveals by the end and some good clone characters. So far, we have none of that in this first chapter. And the first chapter is supposed to establish a storyline and make you really want to get into it. And we get none of that in this. It's just like small anecdotal scenes of Miles's life. His parents are concerned. His best friend screwing his ex. Like, you know, Peter thinks he's a clone and they have a fight. And it's like, this is all kind of teenage, like anecdotal stuff, but it doesn't feel like a larger storyline. The clone's kind of incidental in a lot of this. And so I'm just kind of at a loss of like why I'm supposed to care about this. So far, they've done nothing to hook me. Like, you're showing me genetic copies of Miles Morales, that you could have that show up in any issue. Like, this is not an event.
Agreed.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, same. I didn't need a lot of the context. Like, I feel like they did kind of lay it out a little bit. Obviously, I don't know, drama that was arising prior. But I felt like I understood what was going on. I didn't feel lost at all. I have definitely felt more lost on other comics that I've read. So I really didn't mind it. I liked the artwork. I loved seeing the two Batman kind of like, I loved seeing Peter Parker. I feel like that dialogue really explained a couple things. And I definitely don't dislike it. Like, I'm excited to keep reading. I want to see what's going on. And I don't know, maybe I'm just optimistic on this one, but I'm excited about it. I think this one's going to be cool, at least for me, to experience the clone shtick for the first time in a comic.
Yeah, that might actually, yeah. I think that is a good point. That actually might work to your benefit.
Right.
Because I think you don't have all the baggage that comes with the other stuff that, like,
if there's no Ben Reilly to this, if there's no Kane, if there's not a cool ass Miles Morales clone that I want to root for, like, you know, I'm done.
No, man, Kane. Yeah. Sucker for Kane. Hey, yes. Okay. So moving on. So that's that. So that's actually pretty, that's actually ironically, I think, more optimistic than I thought it would be. So we move on to Robin. So for those who have not been following, in the books, before Future State, Robin had kind of, you know, essentially thrown away the Robin mantle. He had kind of gone back to his mom and the League of Assassins, and then also didn't really like where that was going. So then he kind of left to be on his own and do his own thing. He also discovered some things that his father had hidden from him, and that Roz had also hidden. So, like, there was a bunch of his mom had hidden from him. So there was a lot of stuff that he's trying to unpack, and he's kind of going his own way. A lot of this also stems from what happened in the Bane storyline in Tom King's Batman series, where Alfred was killed in front of Damian, and, you know, for trying to kind of get back into the city and things like that. And there's a lot of stuff that's been covered in actually a really good one shot and some of the Batman books about, you know, how much resentment he holds towards Bruce for Alfred dying and things like that. It's been really some rich stuff. And then, of course, Robin was leading the Titans at one point, and then he started doing some really dark stuff in that book as leader. So then, like, they kind of turned. And so he's kind of on the run. He's wanted, kind of. He's on the run. Batman's looking for him. So that's all the stuff that we kind of we launch into Robin's solo series with. And to me, it's the most interesting. I mean, I used to hate Damian Wayne. Well, I'll admit, when, like, Son of Batman and some of that stuff was coming out, he was obnoxious. In the years since, I have actually come around to really liking him, depending on who the writer is. I really enjoy him and kind of the spark of chaos he brings. So here I'm coming into it like, this is actually a really interesting road for him. It lets him be who he is, his kind of brash side, without some of the inhibitors that being part of the Batman family brings. But you still have some of that because, of course, all that's going on around him. So this, I actually really dug this. I was in on this issue. I thought it did a pretty good job of setting the table for, like, what's gone down. Some of his conversation with Alfred is really interesting. I hope they kind of keep that up. So I dug this issue. I thought if you're not a Damian fan, I actually thought this might be enough to at least give him a shot again. I don't know if it'll completely sway you, but I really like this issue. So I'm all in on this. What do you guys think?
Janelle, you can go.
Okay. I wasn't, like, super invested at the start, and I kind of didn't really know what it was all about. But by the last page, I'm chomping at the bit. Like, I need to know where we're going from here. I don't know if we're spoiling, so I don't want to spoil, but
no, you just can spoil. We're spoiled.
Spoil. Like, this is ruining the whole thing. Is that, like, the last page is like, is he dead?
Like,
I'm so shocked and really excited to see what's happening next. I'm pumped. I actually am really excited about this just because of that. Again, not super familiar with any of the Robin stuff in the comics. So I felt like they adequately explained to me his role, his relationships to different people. And now I feel like I have this, like, high stake situation at the end of the first book. So I'm really excited about this one.
Yay.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think.
The last time I really picked up a Robin number one was Tim Drake's one in the 90s when that debuted.
Oh, man.
And yeah, I think this was better than that. I've grown. Damien's grown on me as well. And I think this book kind of takes him back to his roots in a very kind of good way where, you know, he's this arrogant kind of prick, but underneath it all, he is a little kid just trying to figure out like where he belongs. Cause he doesn't, in his sense of just, you know, identity and belonging, which is kind of his real deeper character story. Cause he was raised by, you know, Batman's like mortal enemies. And he's also Batman. It's a weird parentage to have. And being stuck between these two worlds kind of pulls at him a lot. And so this was kind of cool to see him out on his own. And I didn't know if Damien could like really sustain a book by himself, but he very much does. And they do some creative tricks like him imagining the ghost Alfred and, you know, talking to him and all that stuff. But his just kind of resolve of going around the world and basically recreating Batman's formative years of just traveling, doing what he wanted, fighting, you know, trying to prove to become the best fighter and the best detective and all that stuff is interesting because it is a connection. Cause again, he might on the surface look like he hates Bruce, but he's trying to be like him and trying to kind of follow in his footsteps. And they just did some fun things like punk King Snake in this, who's like a major DC villain. And then he just gets punked by this kid and stuff like that. And the twist at the end with Damian's arrogance coming back on him and him getting KO'd by in that fight with that girl. Yeah, to let him know that this tournament. And I love simple. I like when comic books do simple premises that you can then get more complex within. Like, so an Enter the Dragon scenario, this like Lazarus tournament or whatever it is. I mean, the name suggests there is a way for him to come back from the dead. Right.
Right.
Like, yep. But at a price, as always. And that could be very interesting with what, you know, his life gets altered by kind of doing this and what that means. But yeah, it's a simple premise. He wants to find this tournament. He has to beat up a bunch of people to get invited. He does that. And, you know, where we go from here as he's trying to make a name for himself while living under the shadow of being the son of the bat and, you know, the grandson of the demon and all that stuff is interesting. And there's a lot of good character work that can be done here. And I was surprised how well Damien was able to carry this book.
Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. Man. Oh, look at us. I mean, so positive.
Positive.
I love it. I love it. also, I don't know, Joe, we can save this for another show because I know we got a couple other things to get to. But did you have a chance to check out the Captain Marvel?
I started right away with the first book you sent me. I know you gave me a backstory, but I was actually doing okay. I just understand that she's going through a really rough breakup and I'm excited to see where it goes from there. I fell asleep reading it last night. so we could definitely chat about it more next week, but I am really pumped to see where it goes. I'm awesome. Really loving these choices this week. I had such a good time reading these comics.
Yay.
Yeah.
So also before we go from comics, there was a little bit of breaking news a little bit. So DC Fandom is coming back for a second round.
Oh.
It will be October 16th later this year. Of course, they haven't said like what will be there, but the last Fandom event was a pretty big hit around the comic book office. And I think it went really well. I mean, aside from like a technical snafu here and there, there was a lot of big announcements. A lot of people felt like it essentially did what Comic-Con's online event couldn't. Mm-hmm. And Fandom delivered a bunch of announcements, a bunch of first looks. So the fact that they're bringing it back this year, I'm stoked. There's a lot of big DC projects that, of course, we would love to get more info on. So I'm stoked for that. I think that's great. But that's comics this week.
Jane Matt says Batman 2 trailer in October. Or no, Batman 2nd trailer in October. Yeah, oh, man. Ooh. I hope they don't make us wait till October for a new The Batman trailer. That'd be crazy. Yeah. That'd be really crazy.
Be mean.
Yeah. So real quick, we got to get out of here soon, but we did want to kind of just go and throw over and talk about this new game, Outriders, that's out. Matt is playing. I am playing. I started playing Outriders and getting into it a little bit, but then that Call of Duty update kind of dragged me back into that. I got a new place to play in, new games to play. So I've been stuck on Call of Duty still. They got me back. But Matt, you wanted to stump for our Outriders? You got it. You got like a minute. Go ahead.
Oh, I gotta give our own Jim Viscardi credit because he's been egging me. He's like, dude, you gotta play. You gotta play Outriders. You gonna play. So we finally linked up, and it was enough to get me hooked. And I think it's like since going PlayStation, I've been missing Gears of War. Because of course, like I am not one of the two console people. I typically afford one All right. So I had a PlayStation, and so I've been missing my Gears of War, and this is as close to that fix as I've had so far on the PlayStation side. A lot like Gears of War, stories at times just like, I don't know, some of the voice acting here is terrible. Some of the, like the way they set up certain things is weird and awkward. However, the stuff that the narrative, like the premise and the lore and stuff, is interesting, but the combat, the gunplay is third person, straight up cover based mechanics is awesome. It's addicting as hell. All I want to do is just like go back in and start playing. Of course, you'll like find random guns and you can start. I unlocked all the crafting stuff, so I've become addicted to that. I found a sniper rifle that I can like one shot people in the head if you get that perfect spot. Like it's hitting that itch. And like, aside from naming my character Baird, like this is as close as I'm getting to Gears on PS5. So I'm digging it a lot. Like, and as you go into the story, there is interesting stuff there too. But like the gunplay is fun. Honestly, playing the game is amazing. Getting into the game, I don't know if you've had this problem, Gobi, but getting into the game is like can take forever.
Yeah, like, it takes a long time. Because I did the first part and I thought, and there was an autosave and I thought I was good. And I was like, okay, I got to do something else. I turned it off and I came back and I had to start all over again. And I was just like, oh my gosh. It can be long between saves. Yeah, that's one thing. Wow. I wish they just let you auto save, like manual save and get out. But it is basically Gears of War, but with this added element of Destiny's powers, you know, and classes. And they kind of just lump the two together and it works surprisingly well. Like the cover based mechanics I love in shooting, but it's so much better when you can just like run up to people and I'm a pyromancer and just like flame them. And because you start to lose a lot of those gun battles, like you start to get shot up and it starts to go south, and then you got to whip out your powers and know how to effectively employ those different classes of powers, because that's what really helps you take down people in battle and really kind of take out mass amounts of enemies. And the more you get used to that and using that, it becomes a lot of fun, because you could run in a room full of just enemies and be like, no, I'm going to slaughter you all. I'm going to dodge. And when you get the kind of cover, and the cover based stuff is really a lot tighter than I thought it would be. So you can like move from one, you know, thing on one side of the room and then point to another and have your character automatically like run there and take cover, flame those dudes, run behind them, then shotgun everybody. It gets to be a lot of fun. And they've balanced it out pretty well, so that like while you're using your powers and getting shot up, all everybody you kill, like for my guy, generates health for me, and then I get all my health back. And then I'm like, oh, word! And I turn around and just start slaughtering everybody else behind me, and like it gets a lot of fun. I haven't gotten into co-op yet, but I can see from the setup that it's pretty fun too. How to strategize, how to kind of, you know, flank and move and do all that stuff. So the mechanics of it are pretty good. I'm kind of happy with Outriders.
Yeah, I'm an ice. Based on like I have the cryo turret, and like I have like a little missile launcher that like pops up and like can shoot a bunch of stuff, and having that with playing with Jim, who was a pyromancer as well, so like having the ice and fire back and forth is awesome. Like, yeah, it's addictive. Like, they get the technical stuff smoothed out, because like you can be on that opening screen. I've had to restart the game.
Oh yeah, that's a big thing.
Oh my god,
that opening screen with just spinning circle, you'll be there forever. Like, entering Square Enix. Like, am I though?
Close, get out. Close, get out. And I'm like, oh my god, I just want to start it. Like, that is the most frustrating part.
To be honest, that's what got me back to Call of Duty. Is I finished my download of Call of Duty, and one time I was trying to play Outriders, and it was like I had to reload it like three times, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna play Call of Duty. But they got to get some things smoothed out. But Outriders is pretty good so far.
Yeah, pretty fun. So that's cool. With Outriders.
All right, that'll do it for our show, Comic Book Nation. Man, this one got longer than I thought it would be. We went deep on a lot of things today. We got to do a couple quick shout outs. As always, we have quick mentions. I'm going to mention Invincible once again. We had Robert Kirkman on a few shows ago to talk about Invincible, but that animated series has really grown on me a lot. It's really good. So, and I really look forward to that every week, and it's coming towards the end of its arc, but, for season one, but definitely go out and support that. Amazon's Invincible. It'll scratch that itch for The Boys. It'll scratch that itch for the 2000s kind of Justice League cartoon and all that. And it's really good. So I'm really enjoying that. Also, and this is for Jim Viscardi out there and the rest of our staff who I've had to dodge on spoilers, gotten some downright fights, but The Circle is back for season two, baby. This got me through quarantine last year, was watching The Circle, and Circle season 2 is on Netflix right now, and I've been enjoying that. I'm taking my time with that. I'm treating it like a real reality show. Take it like a, you know, show every couple days. I watch an episode, but they brought over my girl Chloe from Too Hot to Handle, which is like the greatest crossover in reality show history, in my opinion. And I love The Circle. It's just
the Circle.
A fun
it's like
game.
A social media thing, right? Is that wrong? No. What is that?
Who are you? And who?
I don't know what The Circle is, by the way.
I'm sorry. I don't know this.
Yes, The Circle, for anybody wondering, is a social media game. So a bunch of people go and they live in like in a fancy apartment building and they can't leave their rooms. They can't meet each other. They just communicate through chat threads and voice activated chat threads.
Okay.
Which is called The Circle.
It's and, no floor it. Is lava, Kofi. Okay.
No.
All right.
I love The Floor is Lava.
It's so good. Yeah.
But but it's really good because they have to, because some people are catfish and some people are real in who they are.
Ooh.
And so they got to out strategize each other basically through chat threads.
Okay.
To kind of like vote who goes home every week, and people become influencers and they're immune. And it's a whole setup.
So, wow.
Yeah. But everybody's just in their room and they have to play in their rooms and they can't see each other until like once somebody's eliminated, then they get to go and pick one person they want to meet in person and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh.
It gets really good because it's just like all the drama of every chat thread you've ever had with friends, like turns into a TV show. Yeah.
Like, also, and so yes, Alex, the Miz is Johnny Gage. Yes, he is.
All right. So that's Invincible, The Circle, season 2. Matt, you had some things to say before we get out of here?
Just real quick, tease of things to come this week and the next. If you are interested in Monster Hunter World, the board game, we've got some impressions going up. That game is fun as hell. Also, Dark Side of the Ring season 3 is coming. By the way, if you ever want to not be depressed, don't start a day by watching.
No.
Because, oh my
man.
God.
That will depress, oh no.
That will depress you.
But I mean, like, they should have entire therapy set just for wrestlers.
Oh my God, man. It is crazy. So we've got an interview with the creators coming up next week. So watch for that. And season 3 looks to be as interesting and compelling as season 1 and 2 were. Some big stories here. So definitely keep a lookout for that. But that's me.
Janelle, do you have anything you want to chat up before we get out of here?
I just I finished reading The Killing Joke. Ooh. And it like is so disturbing. And I also watched the animated special on HBO. And it like the comic book is so freaking frightening and disturbing. And I like couldn't sleep at night, and just bravo, because that was a very, very job well done. And I just have to give props because it was very, very well done. And also Harley Quinn, I finished the animated series on, you know, on HBO, and it's just awesome. If you guys Fantastic. Haven't checked it out. Yeah.
King Shark.
All right. I love King Shark. He's my favorite. So good.
Ron Funches for the win.
So good. Yep.
All right. And that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, we are live every Wednesday at 12 noon Eastern time on Twitch, on Facebook, and on YouTube. Sorry. If you missed a live show, you can watch on any of those platforms after the show has been recorded. If you want to listen, we are on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, the big ones. You can tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast. It'll get going for us. For you, if you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. We appreciate it. As always, we will be back next week. You can find us at our Twitter handles or at the Twitter handle at Comic Book Nation. You can see it if you're watching. If you want to know where to find me, I'm at Kofi Outlaw.
I am at Matt Aguilar CB.
I am at Janelle Wheeler.
And we want to thank you guys, as always, for tuning in with us. And thank you to Mark Deschamps for also jumping on and talking Mortal Kombat with us today, and our gaming team for doing all that coverage. You can check all that stuff out on comicbook.com gaming. We have a whole bunch of Mortal Kombat insights, interviews, video interviews, all that good stuff. So check that all out if you love the movie. All right, that'll do it for this episode. We're Comic Book Nation. We're out. Peace.